What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. This episode is going to be a little bit different because I'm actually repurposing an interview I did on the Hustler podcast last week. Really good interview. We talk about all things growing a side hustle, scaling a side hustle, and paying off all your debt so you can live life without constraints. If this sounds interesting to you, go ahead and check that out. And also be sure to check out Jeremy's podcast, The Hustler Podcast.
On today's episode of The Hustler Podcast, I am joined by Ryan Helms. He's the co-founder of Legacy Podcasting. He also runs a community website at gritandhustle.co and a podcast called Hustle to Freedom. So he's a relatively new entrant into the world of entrepreneurship after quitting his six-figure day job in the corporate world in August 2019. And here are some quick facts about him, okay? He paid off $200,000 in debt within 27 months. And he has a six-figure side hustle that has turned into a full-blown business now. So he just quit his job. It's September now, so he just quit his job last month. And that job paid him six figures, you know, and that's quite a feat, isn't it? So in this episode, we'll dive deep into how he paid off the huge amounts of debt in such a short period of time through his side hustle.
You're listening to the Hustler Podcast. We interview and speak to awesome hustlers all around the world, giving you insight on how to hustle better, learn from day-to-day hustlers, and get insights to start and grow a side hustle, and how to turn it into a full-blown business in the 21st century. The Hustler Podcast, available on all the major podcast platforms. Broadcasting around the world, this is the Hustler Podcast.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming on to the show. Why don't you say hello?
Hey, what's up, Jeremy? Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to chatting with you here.
So you've got a really impressive story, you know, paying off like $200,000 in just 27 months. Why don't you start with by telling me a little bit more about yourself and also your side hustle that turned into a business?
Yeah. So I went to, you know, like most people, I went to college and thought, you know, I'd probably work in corporate America forever. And, you know, it really wasn't till, you know, within the past 2, maybe 3 years that I even knew what the hell like entrepreneurship was. Like I didn't grow up around it. Like I didn't know really anybody that was an entrepreneur. And so I really didn't understand that that was like even a path in life. So fast forward a little bit in 2016, you know, I've been in the corporate world for a little bit after. So I graduated from college in 2010. So I think I'm 32 right now, I think. so like, I wasn't like, I didn't get into this like super, super young. I didn't get into it super, super late either. So in 2016, I'd been like busting my ass. Can I say ass on here?
Yeah. Totally explicit. No worries.
So I was like busting my ass, like trying to make it in the corporate world. And I was doing really good. Like I'd moved cities to take another job in which was actually a really good company. Gave me a lot of opportunities. I learned a ton of stuff, but I was just working a ton and I was starting to reach what maybe some people refer to as like burnout. And so what I did was I was literally, about, you know, 13 feet over that way. I was sitting on a couch and it was a Friday night. This was before I was like, so I'm married now. This was before I was like married or anything. I wasn't even dating anybody. And I just bought a round trip ticket to Nairobi, Kenya. And I just wanted to like go do something, and I only had 2 weeks of vacation. So I used all of it on that trip, all 2 weeks. So that was the only thing I got to do that whole year was go on this trip, but it was really life-changing. And I know it sounds cliche, like travel the world and have a life-changing experience, but I really did. Like that was the trip that sparked like an aha moment for me, because I went on a safari. I did a bunch of cool stuff, but it really happened when I went to this island called Zanzibar. And when I was there, I just met people that were like traveling the world through a lot of different like means. Like some of them had like sold everything they had and was traveling the world. Other ones had businesses that they ran online and it funded like their excursions. Some of them were doing it for 6 weeks. Some of them had been traveling for like 2 years. And I was like, man, like, I don't know if I want to travel like that for that long, but I want to have the ability to make that choice to whether that's something I want to do or not. So I was like, all right, plane flight back from Africa back to Atlanta where I live at. I had the realization that, you know, I'm a very risk adverse person. So like, how could I even make this happen? And so I had to, like, first thing I had to do, like, was take my head out of the sand with my finances. Like, I just always chose to ignore them. And so I like, faced my finances, realized I had, like, it ended up being, like, $209,000. If you looked at all the different forms of debt that I had, whether it be, like, my mortgage or my car or my student loans or credit cards, it all summed to about $209,000. So my objective, it was a long-term objective. Like, I knew it was going to take me 2 years, two plus years to pay it off, right? And so I set that goal knowing it was gonna be a long, tough road, but I just started like putting the pieces in place to make that happen. And we can dive into how exactly all that happened, but when I got back, I started on my side hustle journey, and 27 months later, I paid off all my debt and quit my job and am, you know, going full-time into my business now, which will do well over six figures this year.
Wow. So what does financial freedom mean to you? You know, like you mentioned that you wanted to have the option to travel the world, but you're not sure that if that's what you want to do. What's the ideal life that you want?
Yeah, I think there's three different types of freedom. You have time freedom, location freedom, and you have financial freedom. Regarding the financial freedom, like for me, like how I think about it, this may not be like how it's defined or how I would even define it, but how I think about it is financial freedom means you no longer have to make decisions based on money. So can I do this? Well, let me check my bank account. Can I quit my job? Well, let me see if like my business is generating enough revenue. Financial freedom means like, you don't have to make decisions in life based on whether you do or do not have money. So that's how I think about it. So when I was like, man, I would love to like take my side hustle full time, like achieving financial freedom meant like I didn't have to say, does my side hustle need to be making substantial revenue because I still need to pay my bills? I just didn't want to have bills. Some people have more confidence in themselves. So this is actually, I think, a flaw in me, right? Because I said I'm very risk adverse. So some people have that confidence or are like, my business is crushing it. I'll be able to pay my bills and buy this and buy that and everything will be great. But I was like, I want to make sure, like, if this shit doesn't work out, that I'm not gonna be like on the side of the street or something. Luckily my wife works as well, and now we're married, so there's an extra bit of comfort. But like, that's something that's like where I was. I was like, how do I kind of hedge that risk of kind of jumping in this full time?
Right. So you mentioned that, you know, you wanted to go all in and turn your side hustle into a business. And like, what happened after your trip at Kenya? Like, what kind of steps do you put into place to ensure that, you know, I'm going to pay down this $209,000 in debt, and, you know, I'm going to start working really hard. Like, how did everything pan out for you?
Yeah, great point, because this was something that I don't think you realize in the moment, like, how things are going. And I think if you try too hard to, like, force things and have this, like, super crystal clear long-term plan, like, the goal, like, you can have a long-term goal, but a long-term plan I don't think is realistic, because things will never, ever, ever go how you think they're going to go. Like, things will pivot, things will change, this will work, this opportunity will come up. Like, it's going to be like your path to get to where you want to go is going to be so much different than you actually think it's going to be. So for me, the first thing I did was like, all right, well, I need to start consuming some content. So I started listening to podcasts like yours, Jeremy, where I was like, how do I do this? Like, how do I make all this stuff happen? And so I was like, let me look at what I'm good at right now. So it was like health and fitness stuff. So I worked out a ton. I already had people that came to me like asking questions about nutrition and working out and stuff like that. So that's where I started. So I started creating content around health and fitness stuff, Instagram content, created a website, started writing a blog, like none of which I wouldn't recommend like going that path right now unless you have a really clear strategy. But that's kind of where I started at. And I was like, this is where I want to go. Like, I love this stuff. I'm like into it. But then like things changed. I started moving forward. And then I was like traveling the world with my job. Like I was going all over Europe. I was traveling all over the US. And people were like, how are you like, they knew what I was doing on the side. They knew I like had this side hustle. I didn't necessarily hide it. And then they knew I was doing all like had a team that I managed at work. I was traveling all the time. Like, how did you manage the two? And then I was literally sitting at a Starbucks around the corner from where I live at on a Saturday morning. I was like writing out all these ideas and stuff. Then I came up with this idea of the side hustle journal. And then things changed, right? Boom, light bulb idea. And stop the health and fitness like stuff. Like, even though I'd spent so many hours working on it, like I found my next shiny object, right? This is something we all have to fight against. But I was like, man, this is something like I feel like I could really help people in, because this is an area I'm also really, really good in, is like time management skills and project management and all that kind of stuff. So I started creating a product and ended up launching that on Kickstarter at the end of 2017. So almost like a year into my side hustle journey, I launched this Kickstarter project, which was super, super difficult because I had no audience. I didn't know anybody. Like, I still didn't know anybody. Like, what I preach a lot now, we can get into this, is like relationship building and like surrounding yourself with people that are, you know, leveling up and doing what you want to do. But I didn't know about any of that at the time. So I was like on page 60 of Google, like finding people's email addresses on their website, like shooting them like cold emails, trying to get people to like promote and support the project. And I got some people to do that. And I raised like $15,000 on that Kickstarter project, which was cool. But it was, if you looked at it on like a ROI perspective, like all the time I put into it, like I lost money. Like, I put so many hours into that thing. So I did that and then started building like an ecosystem around this whole side hustle concept, right? Started a blog, started a podcast, did all that stuff. And the podcast is like what really took off for me. And eventually I met my business partner on a podcast, that the business that we have now. So like the podcast was really like the gateway. And again, it's all about like keeping your eyes open once you're on this journey. Like, you have to avoid shining object syndrome, because there's always going to be ways to make money online. We were talking about this with a client yesterday. He was like, man, I can tell you 1,000 different ways that you can make money online right now. He's like, my problem is there's so many ways to make money that if I don't control myself, I'll end up making less money. Because he does over $100 million a year. And he was like, if I don't limit the opportunities that I go after, I will actually make less money, not more money. And I think even at the side hustle level, even if you're making like $1,000 a month, right? If you keep chasing all these shiny objects, you'll make less money, right? It's kind of counterintuitive to how some people think about it. But that's kind of how I went about it. I started things, failed things, started things, pivoted. And now we've got a content marketing agency, which focuses on podcasting, and we help internet entrepreneurs, we help SaaS companies, we help supplement companies, all kinds of people launch podcasts and grow their audiences.
I'm just picking on a point that you mentioned just now, saying that, you know, your client or your buddy saying, you know, if you keep chasing all these shiny objects in the room, you're going to end up making less money. So I think it's very important to have a strategy that's slightly broad and sticking to it. You know, stop. If it doesn't fit your strategy, you shouldn't pursue it. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, for sure. Like, knowing exactly where you want to go. I think there's a difference between shiny objects and like strategic opportunities. Like, if something approaches you and there's like great synergies with your skill sets and what you've already put into place, like, that's where I was. Like, I was not, starting a content marketing agency was not in my strategy. It was not even anywhere on my radar, but this opportunity came to me And my business partner had this awesome skill set, and I had this awesome skill set, and they were totally different skill sets. But when we put them together, it was exactly what we needed to grow and scale a content marketing agency. It was the pieces like just aligned perfectly. So when you step back and you looked at that opportunity, you're like, okay, here's where I see this going based on the synergies I have with this opportunity. And here's where I see my other stuff going. And to me, there was way more upside on this other thing, and I could continue building what I was doing on the side, right, for as long as I felt like I wanted to do that. And I think that's what he was getting at as well, is like things might come up that might be really good opportunities, but they may be huge pivots for you that could like totally pull you out of what's already generating money. See, I wasn't generating that much money at the time, so I wasn't in theory putting much up for risk. He's got $100 million business. There's a big difference there. He could be risking a lot, right? I was risking a little by making a pivot. But I think one thing you have to remember though, like, you can't pivot every 3 months. You can't pivot every 6 months, because you'll never go anywhere. I know so many people that are super talented internet entrepreneurs, but I couldn't even tell you what they do, because they're always pivoting. They're always doing something different. But it's awesome. It says a lot about them, because they find ways to make these new businesses profitable, right? Because this is what they do, and they're obviously still living life. But I feel like they would be so much more successful if they had like a path, and that's the path, and that's what they became known for. Like, we want to be known as like a premier podcast content marketing agency. Like, when people in our space talk about like who can start a podcast, who can help us launch a podcast that'll generate revenue for our business, I want us to come to mind. I want people to know what we do, right? And you can't do that if you're pivoting every week, every 6 months, anything.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for the value bomb. So you mentioned that you only quit your job like in August 2019.
Yeah.
So that was just a month ago.
Yeah.
So how long has this business been running, you know, before you decided to quit your job?
Yeah, so we're recording this in September. I quit my job. Actually, August 2nd, to be exact, was my last day there. And the business started in January. So it had been running, 8 months before I quit. And the month that I quit, just to put it in like perspective, we signed one client in January. We signed no clients in February. We signed a few in March. And then it just kept going up from there, and we slowly grew it. And I think the last month that I was still working and doing the side hustle, we made 36,000 that month in our agency while I was still working my day job as well. So we had got to a point to where we had brought on people onto our team. We had systematized things, and I was able still to do both. I was still able to work my day job, where I managed a team of like, I think it was 14 people. So I had a lot of responsibilities there, and grow this business on the side. And I got married like during this time, and bunch of stuff. Like, so like we really systematize and structure things, which I think is really important, even like if it's a side hustle. But yeah, that's kind of like where we were at. And then I realized, like, with what we had in the pipeline, there's no way in hell that I would have been able to do both. Like, one of them was going to substantially suffer, and I saw a lot more enjoyment for me and potential for revenue on the entrepreneur side of things, right? More risk as well, but we talked about that earlier. So for me, it was kind of like, all right, if I'm ever going to do this, it's going to be like right now. Like, this is like the golden opportunity. So I put in my notice, which was super scary, and yeah, jumped ship, and here we are.
Nice. Do you currently take a salary from Legacy Podcasting?
That's a really good question. So we didn't for the first time we took money out of the business, we were 6 months into it. So we didn't take any money out of the business for the first 6 months. And then we started taking money out at that point. So yeah, right now we're taking a percentage of the revenue out. And obviously we split that. My business partner and I, we split the revenue, the profit 50-50. But yeah, we pull some money out now. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm assuming that for the first 6 months, you guys are just reinvesting all the profits, whatever clients you signed on, the money you made, you're just dumping it back into the business, right?
Yep. So yeah, exactly.
How do you guys deploy the funds? Like, was it used for marketing, you know, for equipment, hiring, stuff like that?
Yeah. So a couple things. So we thankfully, so I talked about earlier, like complementary, or we had opposite skill sets. So one of the skill sets that my business partner brought to the table was networking, relationships, things like that. So we actually haven't had to spend anything on advertisement, zero up to this point. And All that's been word of mouth and referral. So for example, there'll be like a post in like a big Facebook group or something, and somebody will ask about podcasting. And there's a handful of people to get tagged, but there's always a lot of people that tag us, right? So we actually get a lot of business just from stuff like that. With a lot of big name people doing millions of dollars a year just from like a Facebook post, we'll land them as a client. So we weren't spending any money on any marketing activities. We were spending money on like hiring a good team. We were also just to be honest and transparent, because I don't want to sound like we have everything figured out or had everything figured out. Like this sounds weird, but like we didn't know like how to pay ourselves. Like we didn't know all right, we have all this money sitting in the bank. Like how the hell do we like pay ourselves? Like I know we have to like save money for taxes. I know we need to make sure we have cash flow to pay our team and that kind of stuff. What's the right way to pay ourselves so it's like it's tracked? And you know, it sounds like super dumb, but until you like face that, you're kind of like, you know, it's different once you have partners and stuff, because if it's just yourself, it's kind of like, okay, I'll just like transfer that money into my bank account, right? But once you like have a long-term vision and you have a business partner and stuff, it's like you need to be on the up and up and make sure you're like covering your taxes and you know everything is track. So it took a while just to figure out like how the hell do we even pay ourselves. So it's super simple, right? You transfer the money, but we just wanted to make sure like everything was like kosher and there wasn't going to be any, like when we did our taxes at the end of the year, the dude's not going to be like, what the hell did you guys do this for? So yeah. But yeah, right. So a lot of it was growing our team. So where did we spend it? We didn't do marketing. We didn't know how to pay ourselves. So what were we doing with our money? We were sitting on it and we were hiring good people.
Right. So what does your hiring roadmap look like? How did you guys make your hiring decisions, you know, in the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. Good question. Cause I actually just redid our flow chart for this yesterday. Cause we just hired somebody yesterday. So it's pretty basic. I'll just walk through the basics. It's super, super easy. We make a post somewhere like, let's just say like Upwork or onlinejobs.ph or some of those type of sites, or it could be there's some Facebook groups that we have connections with, but we make a post and we get some replies. I'll just walk through the whole thing. We get some replies. We look at those replies. Who has a skill set that makes sense? We message those people. We send them to an application. One of the things we do in the application is we have a trick question in our application. So we ask them a bunch of stuff like about themselves and how are they as a person, because we want to figure out how do they communicate? Are they going to fit into our work culture? All that kind of stuff. We ask them like what's their internet speed and stuff, basic stuff that you'd want to know, right? Because these people need to have decent internet. So they actually have to attach a screenshot of like what their internet speed is on where they're at, little stuff like that. And then in the very first part of the application, it says like, please read the instructions below in detail, right? And in those instructions, it basically just says, fill out this form, blah, 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 blah. And the last question on this form is going to ask you a math question. Do not answer the math question. Just put the number one there. Right. So we're trying to see if people actually are like reading the instructions. So people will go through the whole thing and then they'll be like, you know, what's 17 plus 2? And they'll put 19. And I'm like, well, obviously, like at the very top of the application, in the biggest letters on the whole thing, it says read the instructions below in detail. Right. And it tells them exactly how to answer that question. If they don't do that, that tells me that this person, you know, is not reading the instructions. Sometimes I'll still talk to those people if they look like they have a really good profile. But a lot of times, like if I'm getting a, like if we get a big blast of people coming in and applying to us, and I'm sending out that application to like 15 people, 20 people, that'll be a screening process. Like, I won't even look at the people who, I'll literally put a filter on that spreadsheet, and if it's not number one, I don't even look at them. So that's how like we can filter out people right from the go. And then after we do that, so they fill out the application, we'll hop on a call with some people that we've narrowed down to that list. So we'll hop on a quick call with them. If they make sense to move to the next step, we'll kind of figure out internally who makes sense to move to the next step. And then we send them a test project. So we have another form. It's the, everybody gets the same test project. So the people I hired 2 months ago, and they did the test project, I can compare the results with the newest test project. For example, like we do some writing in our agency. So we have a test project where they have to listen to a podcast and they have to summarize it, pull out the key points and that type of stuff. So I everybody gets the same episode. So I can easily compare that test project. It's a templated project. I send everybody that same link to that same form. Then I review their test project. All right, narrow it down again, who did the best. And then that person who did the best on that test project, I'll hop on another call with them and make sure everything seems up and up, everything wants to go good. Then I'll send them a onboarding form. And in that onboarding form, it's going to, without me doing anything, it's going to onboard them into all of our systems, all of our processes, get their initial training out of the way, everything. And at the end of that, they schedule one final call with us. And then that's kind of like the final onboarding plus the first kind of training session for whatever role they're going into in, within the company. And then we have a 3-week trial period where we kind of vet people out before we introduce them to the team.
Right.
So that's a long-winded version. That's our hiring process. So.
Sounds super interesting because I especially like the, you know, the Easter egg math question in there. That's sort of a trick question to see if, you know, if the applicant is actually paying attention. It's like a very easy way to filter out people who are just applying to every single thing they see, right?
Yeah. So I try to make it super obvious by making it super bold at the top. And one funny story before we move on, I did this in a Facebook group one time. And a lot of people in this Facebook group, it's for podcast editors. They're very like high and mighty on their job. And they think they're like worth $1 million for what they do. So, but I posted it in there because I know there's a lot of people and we needed an audio editor. And I got so much hate because at the time, this was all, it was kind of my mistake as well. The question used to be, what is your age? And you're not supposed to ask that kind of stuff on application, right? What's your age? Yeah. It's almost like against the law. But in the beginning, it said, do not answer your age, put the number one. And I had like so many people going, oh man, like, is this some type of joke? What type of company do you run asking for people's ages? And, you know, I got like 20 comments of like hate. And then there were a couple of people like, you idiots, did you read the very first sentence on the application? He doesn't want your age. So I ended up changing it to the math question thing, but I thought that was kind of funny. Just a lot of people, yeah, they don't, they're just trying to mass apply to stuff and you can kind of filter out those people.
Yeah. Awesome value bomb over there. So, I'm very curious. So you said, you know, you have a team of 14 people now. Am I correct?
No, I had a team of 14 at my old job. Right. We've got a team of, I think, 9 people now.
Nine people. So what do they do? What are their roles? Like, how do you, you know, prioritize your hiring decisions? Like, you know, I need a writer, a video editor, for example. How do you guys make that decision?
Yeah, so we started off with what did we need to get out of? So for the first 3 months, we were doing everything ourselves. Like, so my partner did all the audio production, editing. That's his background, was on that side of things. I did all the creative. And so the first thing we hired was a writer because it takes a long time to do that piece of the puzzle, especially at scale when you've got several clients. So we hired a writer. That was our first thing. That was our first hire in the business. He still works with us today. So he's been on the team for, you know, 6+ months. At this point, we hired him in March at some point. So we hired him. And then the next thing was audio editing is obviously taking up a lot of time. So then we hired an audio editor. And let me back up. We've hired several people that didn't work out. We probably hired and had to part ways with four or so people at this point. So not everybody always works out great, but you don't, you can't always catch that, right? There's a lot of mm-hmm. things you can do, and there's a lot of learning lessons through those, but you can't catch everybody. But then we hired an audio person, and then we hired another audio person, and then we hired another writer and somebody that helps us also with like some general VA stuff. And yeah, then we've just been kind of scaling with the business. Now we're at the point where we have to hire somebody with a more of a skill set in like the creative social media side, because it's been super difficult to find, actually. It's kind of surprising to me, but like some of these other jobs are, they're skilled positions, but they're more common positions. But somebody that can write copy for social media, that can write like really good Facebook posts and really good Instagram copy and stuff like that, that's different than somebody that can like write show notes for a podcast, right? Yeah. You need to figure out like what are the hooks and stuff like that. So we're trying to find like people like that, which are kind of like next level type people. You're gonna have to pay more for them. It's a totally different skill set. They need to be like a new age, like social media, like enthusiast, right? And, mm-hmm. and also be looking for work. That's a big point as well. Right. So yeah, that's, we kind of look at what's going on in the business and where do we need to free up our time, right? And part of that comes with cash flow. We got to have a cash flow before you can hire people. So we're also making sure like our revenue is at a point that we can support bringing on more and more people. And one last thing that we've done, just kind of a quick tip for people, is ask, so if you hire people, ask your team what other skill sets they have. So we're actually building this into our onboarding process, but we didn't have it in there before. But you need to like reach out to your team and say like, hey guys, what else are you good at? Like what else, what other skills do you have? Right? Because if they're not already like maxed out at like 100% capacity, you may be able to use them for something else. A good example for us was our audio editors. Like I wasn't doing a lot of video editing on the downstream of a project. So an episode may come in and they would edit the audio, and then we would also be doing video for this client, and then I would be editing the video. So it was like double work, right? It's the same file. So I just reached out to them and was like, hey guys, you happen to know how to edit videos? And they're like, oh yeah, like I definitely have some, I'm not like an expert, but I have some experience with Adobe Premiere. I was like, great. How about this? How about I also buy you guys a training course on Udemy, which cost me $9.99. And I gave it to both of them. I was like, hey guys, like you can go through this training course, like maybe brush up on some other stuff in Adobe Premiere. And then now like they're editing our videos for us too. They're not doing the micro content because again, that's a totally different skill set with the headlines and the hooks and stuff, but they're editing the video. And now I don't have to do any of the video editing for like a long form YouTube video. So that came by just asking me, what other skill sets do you guys have?
I think that's extremely actionable and useful. I better start doing that to my team as well. Probably save a lot of money and time, right? You know, and maximizing.
Yeah, you don't have to hire a new. Yeah, you don't have to hire a new person.
Yeah. So you know, just let's turn it back a little bit, because I was, for the first 6 months this year, you were juggling your full time job, your side hustle, and this business. So what kind of...
And a wife.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that must be tough, right, on you. So what kind of strategies or tactics do you use to, you know, manage your time better? Like what kind of productivity hacks
do you use? So what I do, like if you look at my calendar right now, I use what is referred to as time blocking. So each day, at the end of that day, I actually block out my complete schedule for the next day. So there's already going to be some things on there. I'll have some meetings, some like client calls and that type of stuff. But everything else I fill up. Like I want it to be like a block of like colors, right? And the colors actually mean stuff as well. For me, blue is a meeting with a client or somebody. And red is something that I'm working on, like a task or something that I have to knock out. So I use time blocking. Day before, I just fill up my calendar. I look at what's all the stuff I need to do and I put it in there. I don't get super granular on time blocking. So for example, if I have to go in and create like micro content and stuff for like several clients, I'm not putting each client that I need to do that activity for. I'm just blocking out like 2 hours for client work, right? And then I know during that time I'm doing this type of stuff. So it just kind of keeps me aligned with what is the type of work that I need to be doing during that time period. So I use time blocking. Obviously, when I had a job, I used my product, the Side Hustle Journal, like that. I mean, I created it because I needed something like that. So I used that when I was managing both of those things because it allows you to excel at your day job. So I always tell people this, like, just because you have a side hustle, don't forget what makes you money right now. Like that, your job is what's putting money on the table. Like, so if you neglect that, and your side hustle is not producing substantial revenue right now, like you're an idiot. Like, because your side hustle is not making you any money. Yeah, you love it. You're passionate about it. Cool. Passion's not going to pay the bills and buy food. So you need to still be trying to be excellent at your day job. So I actually got 2 promotions during the period of this whole thing of building out my side hustles. So I was still super focused on that. So I used a tool like that so I could structure my days, make sure my morning is planned out. My routine in my morning was always on point with like exercise and stuff like that. And then I always knew what I was doing in the evening, right? So I always had like the goals that I was working towards. So that's kind of how I do it and now and how I did it when I was working a day job, because you still need to try to excel at both of them.
Right. So like, I like the concept of time blocking. I try to do it myself, right? But as an entrepreneur, don't you feel that, you know, sometimes there are just some fires that you need to put out, you know, some distractions here and there. Like, do you stick to the time block? Like, you know, you mute your phone, you leave it somewhere. Do you do any kind of stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the reality is, yeah, stuff is going to come up. There are things you can do. It comes back to right, controlling your inputs, right? So how distracted are you allowing yourself to get? So you can do things like, you know, silence your phone, turn off Slack notifications, whatever it is. But for me, like, it comes down to like, I can't get upset with myself if something comes up and I can't do that at that time. Sometimes I move things around. Like, I'm like, crap. Like I worked on that when I was supposed to be working on this. So then I'll just move it to tomorrow. Right. I don't always do that. And I don't try to make that a habit, but that happens. And I also try to be as deliberate as I can about doing what I'm supposed to be doing in those times, because it'll make you work quicker. It'll make you get stuff done quicker. If you're like, man, I got an hour to get this done and then I got to move on to the next thing, like, you're going to do your best to get it done in that hour. So it's about like personal accountability as well with time blocking. And then the last tip on it is you got to build some buffers in. So like, don't fill up your complete day with like task, 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 task. Because things are going to come up. You need to like build in 30 minutes here in the morning, build in an hour in the afternoon. And when I do it, I just call it miscellaneous. So I'll build in some time blocks and it'll just say MISC for miscellaneous. And during that time, I just work on like whatever is going on, like whatever random stuff is popping up.
This sounds a lot more actionable than, you know, just, you know, blocking up time and, you know, just focusing on that thing and one thing alone. So, very valuable insight over there. So I just want to talk a little bit more about your business. How does your business help brands amplify their message? Because that's what you guys do, right? On Legacy Podcasting. Yeah. Yep. So can you just go dive deep a little bit into that?
Yeah, for sure. So you're spot on. We try to use, like, there's a lot of companies that help brands reach new audiences, get revenue, all that kind of stuff. There's tons of agencies and companies that do that. We just try to do it through the medium of podcasting. So that's like, that's our gateway into these companies is like, hey, if you want to start a podcast and you want to reach new people, like where they're actually listening, like we can help you do that. So a lot of what we do is launching podcasts. So we do this with like brands and companies that have an audience. Like if you're just starting out and you want to, you just want to start a podcast, cool. We've got a course for you that you can do that in 21 days. Like, boom, you go do that. You take this course. It'll teach you all the stuff we do in our agency, but you got to do it yourself. And then our bigger clients, we kind of walk them through and we strategize like, it becomes part of the, it's not necessarily at that point launching a podcast. It's like how we're creating strategic content for them. It's content that is going to fit into their business. We're talking a lot with our clients about what is their goals in the next 6 months, where do they want their business to be in a year, what products are coming out over the next 6 months, where's their audience at, how are they reaching them already, where's their ad spend going right now, what's converting the most, all that kind of stuff. So we spend a lot of time up front figuring out like where is their business at and where is it going, and then we try to figure out how can we make podcasting just amplify that. We're not trying to like pivot their business or anything like that. We're just trying to help them reach new people and make this. So I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the term like value ladder, right? So like what's the sequence that people go through? Like how do they ascend in your business? So they start out buying a $7 product, then they buy a $97 product, then they're buying a $1,000 whatever, then they're buying a $5,000 whatever. So like in your business, you always need to have a value ladder that people can ascend up within your business. So we want the podcast to be like the bottom of that value ladder where they're giving away lots of free actionable content, and then we're driving them to the next offer in that value ladder, which is typically going to be their low ticket item. Sometimes we might promote an event. We actually promoted an event for a podcast launch the other day. And we actually didn't have much time with this, but they sold $12,000 worth of tickets off their podcast, like that. So like you can do it, but typically it's for a lower entry point into the value ladder. So free content's bottom of the value ladder, and it's trying to nurture their existing audience and bring new people in that are not aware of them or their solution for whatever it is. So we're working with a lot of businesses and things like that. So these podcasts are very strategic.
Like just going deeper into that event, the ticket sales, like mm-hmm. do you guys have any idea, like out of this $12,000, how many of them are new people? Because, you know, if you're starting at the bottom of the value ladder, it's typically newer and colder audiences, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. For sure. So do you guys have do you guys track, you know, how many of them are existing customers, existing audience, and how many of them are new audiences?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good point. And this is honestly one of the struggles with having a podcast agency. So when you work with, if a business owner works for like a Facebook ads agency, for example, it's really easy to judge the performance of that Facebook ads agency, right? Mm-hmm. You can track the clicks, you can track the conversions, you can track all that. With podcasting, it's not that easy. It takes a lot of like back-end setup to be able to track this stuff. So we have to, a lot of times we're either using like unique tracking links, or we're replicating funnels that they have on the back end. So we'll replicate a funnel and it'll have a unique URL specific to the podcast. And so we know anybody going through that funnel, like we can attribute traffic and sales directly to the podcast or podcast specific offers. So we have one client who they have an offer that they don't talk about anywhere except for the podcast. And within 3 months of that offer, they've got, we just talked to them yesterday. This is why I remember this number. They got 380 people opted in and it's on the outro. So people have to listen to the entire episode to get to that. So they got 380 people to opt in, and it's not talked about anywhere but in the podcast. So it can be a great mechanism for that, but it's super hard to attribute unless you have somebody that has a built out like funnel on the back end. Because if you come to me and you don't have products, you don't have this, you don't have that, like I'm not gonna be able to track anything, right? I'm gonna be able to track like how many people are listening, all the basic consumption type stats, but I'm not gonna be able to like relate revenue back to the podcast unless we do some heavy back end work to like modify these funnels or put very specific tracking mechanisms into place.
So what are your favorite tools, you know, that you use to help your clients with when developing their podcasts and stuff?
Yeah. So our heads, that's probably our favorite tool to use. but I mean, We use Trello to Trello basically runs our agency from a like project workflow standpoint. So we have if I showed you our Trello board right now, it over like anytime we onboard people, I have to be like, please do not freak out when you go in Trello. Please do not freak out when you go in Trello, because it's so well organized and everything is so structured, but there's so much in there. Like, we've got a ton of clients. Some of them are producing multiple episodes per week. It all flows through there. So at any point when you open a Trello board, there's no like background space available. It's all cards moving through a flow, right? So we've got, you know, we're putting out, you know, I don't know how many episodes per week at this point. I mean, definitely more than 30 episodes a week are going out at this point. And yeah, it all goes through Trello. Then all of our business runs through, all of our team communication runs through Slack. So Slack runs all of our team communications. And then like for client work, it's all Adobe products. So we're editing all the audio, Adobe Audition, all the graphics are Adobe Illustrator, all the videos, Adobe Premiere. We don't use like Canva or anything like that. You could use it. And then what else are we use like Headliner and stuff. So if you've ever used Headliner, I think it's headliner.app is the URL. You can create like audiograms and stuff in there. So we're creating like all the templates in Adobe Illustrator and then adding like audiograms over that in Headliner. Really, man, it's not a ton of tools. Like, we do pretty much all of it is like custom done in Adobe products, like all of our graphics and stuff. And then our video, like our micro clips that we create for the videos, like the Gary V style video clips and stuff like that. Yeah.
So did you or your co-founder have any experience in running an agency before this?
No. He worked in an agency before. So he had, I guess on the agency side, he had more of an understanding than I did. But one of the skills, so we talked about like the skill sets he brought to the table, right? Networking, relationships, that type of stuff. The skill set I brought to the table was like, one of the great things about working in corporate America is it teaches you a lot of like organization and stuff like that, right? If you work at the right company. So I brought like that to the table. I think I was already that type of individual, and then working in like that corporate environment just helped amplify that skill set. So like I built out all of our workflow and our process that allows us to track, you know, 25 clients, all putting out tons of content each week. At minimum, we're probably creating 8 different assets for every episode. And then you multiply that
every single time.
Yeah, every single time. Multiply that by the number of episodes we're putting out. So it's a ton of different content. We're writing all the social copy. We're doing all the posting, all the videos. Like, it's a lot of work. So I built out like a process that supports all that. So that was kind of the skill set that I brought to the table. So, and the team aspect. So managing a team, like he didn't have any experience with that. I did. So that was something else I brought.
Cool stuff. So yeah. Last question for you, Ryan, before we end this episode. I know you're not a big... You're not big on planning, you know, like the next 5 years, but what are your goals? Where do you see yourself and the business in the next 5 years?
Yeah, so I'm big into planning, but I'm not big into planning. So you're kind of right there. I just realized that things are going to change, right? You can't know exactly where you're going to go. So what I'm into is more like the vision, right? And not so much the planning, but like the vision of where I want to go. So I actually am, I consume a ton of content from the guys at Traffic and Funnels. I don't know if you've ever heard of that company. So Taylor Welch and Chris Evans are the two co-founders of that company. In 4 years, they went from like zero to $1.5 million a month in revenue. So they're doing, I don't know, they're doing $15, $20 million a year from just a client coaching business. So us being a client business as well, I learned a ton from them. They put out tons of great content. So I learned a lot about like what's going on there. And one of the things they teach is they have something called the morning formula. And it's basically like your vision for where you want to go in life. So, and it's something you look over every single morning, you read through it. It takes you about 15 minutes to read through it, but you basically you're writing about yourself. So you write about yourself in the future tense. So Ryan is Ryan runs, he is the co-founder and chief operating officer for a agency that does $1.5 million a year in revenue. Of that, $800,000 is profit. He lives in a house that costs X amount in the city. It has an awesome view overlooking Piedmont Park in Atlanta. Like, you write in this type of way and you do some future pacing. So there's another section where you write about like more details on where you want yourself to be in 1 year from now, not like 5 years from now. So it's a lot of like vision stuff, and you like read this stuff every morning, and it like puts you in the right frame of mind to like, just by reading it and knowing like where you want yourself to go and reminding yourself of that every day, you subconsciously take the actions that are needed to get there. Right. So in the back, it's really like in the back of your mind. So all this comes from the book Psycho Cybernetics. So if you've ever read Psycho Cybernetics, it all comes from that. It's about like, they call it like the theater of your mind, like how much your mind and your thoughts play into the results you get in life. Like, if you don't have the right mindset and think about things, so mindset's like a big buzzword right now. And a lot of people that are talking about it are referencing concepts that come out of Psycho Cybernetics. It was wrote back in like, it was like the late 50s or the early 60s or something. So it's an old book that still gets tons. So those guys that run traffic and funnels, every new client they bring on, they actually send that book out to them. Like, that's how big of an importance it is for them, because they're all about mindset. So great book if you haven't checked that out. But yeah, that's kind of like when I think about the next 5 years, I'm not planning it. I'm like, I'm envisioning myself already there. Like, this is where I want to be in 5 years, like very specific, like the revenue, where I want to be living at, the trips I took that year, how much time I work, like how big our team is, how much impact we've had on our team's lives, like that type of stuff. And then I naturally take the steps to get there. I don't know what steps those are going to be, but I head in that direction.
Very mind-blowing. I'm definitely checking out that book. I haven't read it yet. I know what my next book is going to be. Okay, I know I said last question, the last question, but I got one last one for you. So if someone was in $200,000 in debt today, and what kind of advice would you give them, to get out of that rut? In a way.
Yeah. So for sure. I would say first thing is like, get your head out of the sand. So really, take a tally of where you're at actually, like how much debt do you actually have? Account for everything, right? If you have a mortgage, like you want to throw that in there, you want to like credit cards, you want to like put everything on the table, tally it up, get ready to like have your feelings hurt, because it's probably going to be a lot of money if you were like me. And, yeah, first things first, take an account for what's going on. Next thing is you need to track every single month your progress to that. You need to have a goal of how much money you want to be putting towards your debt every single month. So for me, this is why it was super important to have a side hustle and my day job. I wanted as much possible revenue coming in. I didn't care how much free time I had. It wasn't about free time. It was about getting to my goal. So my goal meant, right, so paying off debt, super simple. Let me back up to the fundamentals. You have income and you have expenses. Boom. Income needs to be way higher than your expenses are. You do that, you'll pay off your debt super quick. Very, very fundamental stuff. So how do you increase your income? Like I said, you get better at your day job, you get raises, you get promotions, you get a higher salary. You also are working on a side hustle on the side, building up extra income. So when I combine those two things together, you know, I looked at, all right, how much do I need to be putting in each month? So I was putting in, for me, I was paying all my bills, I was paying my mortgage, and then I was putting an extra $2,500 a month into this stuff. So first thing I paid off was my credit cards, then I paid off my car, then I paid off first I paid off student loans, then credit card, then car, and then it was throwing money at my mortgage, right? And then even when my wife was dating, I was still just throwing that much money. I wasn't making her like help pay off my mortgage. When we got married, she also, like, she was on board, right? Because she understands like why we're moving to the goal we're moving towards. So then she started putting in $2,500 a month. So we were putting in an extra $5,000 a month on top of our bills. So we were paying our bills. This is an extra $5K, and we were throwing it straight at the mortgage. Boom, throw it straight at the mortgage. So we paid that off, everything in 27 months just by doing that. Super simple. Like, there's no course you need to buy. There's no anything you need. Like, it's so freaking basic. Make more money and spend less money. Like, cut off your cable. You don't need that. Like, get a cheaper cell phone plan, like whatever it is, like just decrease your expenses. Like, that's all. Like, I had a, so at the time I had, I think it was a 2017 Nissan 370Z, which is a nice little two-door sports car. It was awesome. I felt so cool driving it. Then I realized, like, I don't care if I feel cool driving it. I don't need to feel cool. Like, feeling cool isn't going to help me get to my goal. So I got rid of that thing. I bought a 2012 Honda Civic, a four-door at that, like the even uglier version. So I bought a 2012 Honda Civic, paid cash for it, like right there, boom, done. Like, I'll be able to drive that thing for like the next 10 years if I want to. Hopefully I don't have to, but I'll be able to because it'll run that long. So like, I was trying to decrease my expenses while trying to figure out this whole side hustle game. Like, how the hell do I make more money, right? You try enough stuff and eventually something's going to work.
Thanks for you know, sharing all of that. You know, I know it's, some of it might be a bit personal to you, but I think that would really, really inspire the audience to, you know, take action if they need, they're in, you know, in debt or whatever, right? So yep. Once again, thank you so much, Ryan, for coming onto the show and sharing all of this actionable stuff. So before we end this episode, is there anything you'd like to add? You know, now's the time to plug podcasting or whatever.
Yeah. So no, I would just say, like, if you guys are starting a business on the side, you're working a day job, like, just be consistent with it. Like, consistency is the biggest piece of this whole thing. Like, just take action, figure out like what you want to do. What you're doing now may not be what you're doing in a year from now, but like, find something you want to start building and working towards and just be so consistent with it. Like, it's not even funny. Like, stop hanging out with people that are not, we didn't talk about this, but stop hanging out with people that are not aligned with your goals and where you want to get in life, and just be so consistent. On the weekend, stop like hanging out with, like, partying with friends. Like, put your nose down and do work. Be super consistent and it'll all come. Like, things will change along the journey. Like, what you're doing now, not going to be what, maybe what you're doing in 6 months to a year, but it'll all work itself out if you're consistently working towards it. That's just my biggest piece of advice, is just consistently take action. And if you want to, like, if you want to learn about podcasting and you're listening to this podcast, probably the best path for you to check out what we do is podcastlaunchchallenge.com. That's where you can check out our 21-day podcast launch challenge. So podcastlaunchchallenge.com. And you can also, you can find that on our website, legacypodcasting.com as well. So, oh, and then my podcast. So after you listen to all Jeremy's episodes and consume all of his content twice, then you can check out Hustle to Freedom. That's my podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much once again, Ryan. Like, really awesome session. I think this is, has to be one of our top three episodes. I mean, like, we're still new. We're only 25 episodes in. But yeah, definitely one of the top episodes. So guys, if you like this episode, and if you think one of your friends or your loved ones can benefit from this episode, please, please, please share it with them, okay? Until the next time. Bye.
See ya.
Hustlers, serial entrepreneurs, and plain making more fucking money. Getting started is hard. The Hustler mission is to help people all around the world hustle better by giving you behind-the-scenes access to the best hustlers all around the world. Visit our website at hustler.com, hustlr.com. If you like this episode, please remember to share this podcast with a friend. And definitely subscribe to the Hustler Podcast. Remember, hustle.